Tectorama episode 413 for October 15th, 2014. False positive.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Tectorama.
Remember when?
Tectorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Tectorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
An old man on a bridge asked me the capital of Assyria. I need a reference, please.
Over there, in the media corner.
Now what's my favorite color?
Tectorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Tectorama for October 15, 2014. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Tectorama, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you finding whatever you found. You're in for a treat. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time again. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me is always is, well, he wasn't here last week, but you get the idea. It's Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Red. No, blue.
Ah! And joining us live in the binary studio is also...
Michael Armenegay.
That voice ought to sound familiar.
Yeah, it should.
He was here last week, and I don't think he left.
No, I didn't. I was camping out in the back.
He knows his way around his house better than I do.
I was going to say, I recognize that voice perfectly in that room. If you were in any other room, the residents would throw it all off.
That's it.
I would sound like this.
Wow. Almost lost her there for a second. Good thing I didn't have fluid refreshments in my mouth. Oh, they would have been all over this nice expensive mixer board. We also have...
Tim Adamick.
Tim has been many times on Celesta Sci-Fi, so you're perfectly at home. You're even sitting in your old chair.
Say, this is my old chair,
It's got his butt groove in
pretty
the chair.
Pretty much.
It's like Homer Simpson's couch.
It's every bit as uncomfortable as I remember it.
First day on the show, and he's already complaining.
I know. No pleasing this cast,
That's my job.
Coming up in this episode, we have... See, I learned to pull down the fader this time. We have Calvin and Hobbes, Star Wars. Actually, I think I pulled the Star Wars story, but we'll keep going. And Carl Sagan on drugs. I love the bullets.
Hi, my name is Julia Pose, and I am 11 years old. I love gymnastics and karate. I have to go to school, and I do all the other things normal kids do. But I'm more than that. I'm a geek. I listen to Technorama Podcast. It helps me to maintain my inner geek. For your own inner geek, just go to www.chuckchat.com/technorama. I'm ready for my download, Mr. Tomasi.
This is Ronald D. Moore from Battlestar Galactica, and you're listening to Technorama.
This is creepy. I don't know. Every time I hear that Ronald D. Moore, I expect a Cylon to come out of the closet or something.
Actually, I've always thought that was probably one of our coolest IDs we've gotten.
We've got some dandies in there. But
hey, I remember I actually got a little starstruck when I walked up to him to ask him for that.
But that's why we have it written on a punch card. Please read this because Craig can't talk.
Mr. Moore, can I have your... No. Can I get you to record an RD? ID?
An RD.
RD. A DRD?
A DRD. That's not even the right show.
DRD.
Wow. We have no feedback this week. So
nothing. Nobody cares.
No. Well, actually, we kind of did. We had a contribution from Mr. Pose, whose daughter you just heard. And that was sort of a jab in the ribs because he said, I'll get you a new ID because she's not 11 anymore. Time marches on and our IDs get stale fast. Yes, so right. We appreciate that.
Hey, I do think we got a pocket dial from our voicemail line. So that's something, right?
There you go.
Yeah, it was.
I always like the spam. That's the ones I always like. The ad calls.
Oh, I didn't get those.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
We get
great.
Butt dials. In fact, you get the Gmail attachment. You go 16K ain't worth opening.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Sandra Daly from the General Conference, and I'm running for Congress. We'd appreciate your vote.
I'd appreciate a call like that. We're getting nothing.
Really.
From every once in a while, although they've kind of dropped off lately in the last few years, is we got a few faxes.
Yeah.
Faxes.
Speaking of faxes, before we get too far into the show, I am finally getting around to watching Jason...
Bourne?
No, not Jason Bourne.
No,
the guy who
totally
did the documentary called BBS.
Oh.
Huh?
Dave Slusher told me about this, and
yeah.
Look it up on YouTube.
Yeah.
I'll get you the artist name. I have to look at it again. But I watched the first part. It's like in 9 different parts, 30 to 40 minutes each, where they talk about the sysops.
Fascinating.
It's cool because I live with that.
Yes, exactly.
and they talk about the modems and the guy who had the very first BBS. He's got the hardware sitting next to him.
Wow.
I mean, it is really cool to watch.
The days of the BBS. Wow.
Yeah. I did watch that. It was... It was made by the same guy that did Get Lantern, who, you know, obviously that's about adventure games and stuff.
I'll find it at our next break.
Yeah, but I watched it. I thought it was pretty cool. There was a lot I could relate to, and I go, oh yeah, I remember that. Or there was a lot I would go, oh really? You know, so there was you learn and remember kind of thing.
Yeah, these kids today have no clue that's like. No. Dialing into somebody's computer with a 300 baud modem in the middle of the night.
Entering AT commands for that extra 15 or 20 bits per second.
I used to laugh every year at church because they put the banners over the pulpit and the lectern and decorate, you know, different seasonal colors and things. During the summer, they always had a banner hanging over that had a +++ on it.
ATH.
And I thought I dropped to a command prompt.
No carrier.
Hey, I tell you, I've explained rotary dialing to my son before, and he said that was exhausting.
I love the scene in, what the hell's the name of the movie? We just watched it recently, where he's the teacher that comes out, In and Out. The movie In and Out, where the girlfriend is in the hotel and it's a rotary dial and she's trying to push the buttons.
Blonde moment.
Cal! She can't figure out how to run the phone to call her agent. That was awesome.
Yikes. Well, while we're talking about history, let's do the history thing. On this day in history for October 15, 2014, this is the 288th day of the year. Oh my gosh, get your Christmas shopping done. There are only 77 days left in the year. It was on this date in 1783 that the Montgolfier brothers flew around, it was their hot air balloon, but the first ascent was made by Jean-François Pelletre de Rosiers. I hope that's close enough. It was a tethered balloon, and I think that's the worst name we got in here, so good luck, guys.
Okay, great.
Thank you. All right, in the same date in 1878, the Edison Electric Light Company begins operation. Already screwing them up.
The airship Gaff Zeppelin completes its first transatlantic flight, landing in Lakehurst, New Jersey on this date in 1928.
Which is where the Hindenburg person blew up.
And October 15th, 1932, Tata Airlines, later to become Air India, makes its first flight.
The Tata Airlines. Tata. I would have flown the Tata Airlines.
The New York Municipal Airport, later renamed LaGuardia Airport, is dedicated on this date in 1939.
And 63 years ago, Mexican chemist Luis E.
Miramontes.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Mexican. That's the very last step of this first synthesis of non-theostrone.
That's worse than the name.
Screw you, Tomasi. The progestin that would later become later used in one of the first three oral contraceptives.
Okay.
Nobody's conceiving with names like that.
Oh my God, I gotta wipe the tears out of my eyes. Today in 1953, British nuclear test Totem 1 detonated at Emu Field, South Australia.
Why are the British testing in South Australia?
Because they want to blow up their they don't want to blow up their own country. They have other countries they can blow up.
Where are you going to do it? Thames?
Yeah, right.
I believe it's Thames.
Oh, well, you're correct. Okay. Fortran, the first modern computer language, is shared with the coding community for the first time 58 years ago.
Get out your punch cards, everyone.
Oh, my God.
I have them. They're over there. Yeah. They're over there. I always keep them at hand. 17 years ago today, the first supersonic land speed record is set by Andy Green in Thrust SSC of the United Kingdom. Exactly 50 years and one day after Chuck Yeager first broke the sound barrier. Boy, it seems like that just happened about 5 years ago, doesn't it?
I know.
Wow. And that same year, the Cassini probe launches the Cape Canaveral on its way to Saturn.
And in this date, on 2001, NASA Galileo spacecraft passes the within 112 miles of Jupiter's moon.
Io.
Or if you're Michael Jackson, it's Io.
Io.
Yeah.
Happy birthday goes out on this day to Italian physicist and mathematician Evangelista Torricelli. I think I had Torricelli at the restaurant last night.
It's good with tasty marinara sauce.
Pesto, yeah. Born on this date in 1608.
Oh, okay. And American astronomer Asaph Hall.
careful. Family-friendly show.
Is born in 1829.
Asphalt.
It's not my fault.
Michael?
Oh, it's me. Also born in this state is astronomer Jesse L. Greenstein.
Yes, and author Mario Puzo of The Godfather was born 94 years today.
I'd like to tell you that we've got a new book coming out. It would be a shame if you weren't to purchase this book. Not the crappy ebook thing either. You gotta get one you can hold with your hands and rip in half.
Anyway.
These things have been known to hurt people.
Ebooks have been known to hurt people? Businessman and author Lee Iacocca turns 90 today, and if you can find a better age than that, buy it.
Wow.
And finally, the man who played Spock's father, Mark Leonard. Would have been 90 years old today.
Don't forget, it's Global Hand Washing Day.
Oh, I need to go wash my hands.
No kidding.
I have sanitizer. Does that count?
Take a break. Wash your hands.
And that's the way it was on this day in history for October 15th, 2014. We love you anyway.
Oops. I thought that was the end.
No, goodbye, band. No, it always ends up on a higher key. They go
just
into
fade
that,
it out.
They go into that higher key.
We'll nice fix thing it is, in post.
What is this post of which you speak?
Post. Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone.
What was that?
That's our news clip. We always have someone doing good news for our news.
Good news, everyone.
Rookies.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Am I reading the first one?
I guess I am. So.
We're still working on the new program, people. Thank you for listening. This is the total damage caused by Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes cartoon, because somebody had more time on their hands. Everybody loves Calvin and Hobbes, right?
Mm-hmm.
The comic strip created by Bill Watterson that ran from 1985 to 1995. Wow, only 10 years?
Yeah, it was only 10 years.
Wow.
Although it was it was 5 days a week for 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That would drain anybody. Matt J. Michael of the fictional Proceedings of a National Institute of Science has calculated just how much monetary damage the 6-year-old Calvin caused to his parents' home over that decade. And it was far less than I thought.
Well, read the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Michael used the complete Calvin and Hobbes collection to note every instance of damage in the comic, although Calvin spends a lot of time in imaginary worlds. The report only documents destruction he actually caused to his family home and property. Aha.
Okay.
There's the hook. Michael used Amazon, because
that's a good resource.
Yeah. Right.
And if you have Prime, you get free shipping for
that's
all this replacement
right.
stuff.
Knocks it down a little bit.
to find the cost of broken items and guess the mother would probably shop somewhere like J. Crew. For home damage.
Because every mother shops at J. Crew.
Yeah, that's not just arbitrary at all.
For home damage, he used the site HomeWise to estimate costs. Well, okay.
Okay, well, that's a little inflated, but okay.
So, in total, Calvin caused nearly $16,000 U.S. worth of damage over 10 years, which seems surprisingly low given his reputation, actually. That's what I thought, too.
Yeah. Although you figure, too, when that aired in the 90s.
Okay, so you're counting
for
inflation.
So adjust that up. Yeah, yeah.
Cost of living.
The most expensive damage he caused over the years was water damage. Yeah. When he flooded the house in his first year, he would have cost his parents almost $5,000. Interestingly, he caused the most damage in that first year of publication and then became less destructive over time. The longest duration in which no damage caused was 550 days from 1987 to mid-1988.
Wow.
Really?
No damage.
No. I disagree with this article. The most expensive damage he did was to my mental health when Calvin went away.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know.
So. Nice buzzkill there. We were having fun until you brought that up.
You know, I read a refutation of the methodology of that study from another site this week, who went through and said, no, he missed all this and he missed all that. And he missed
really?
That. Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm not prepared, so I can't bring it up. I think that author came back and said, yeah, just my rough guess on some of the stuff that he missed was probably an additional $40,000 in damage just on the things he identified that he thought was missed.
So we're talking like 65 or 55, 65, well, something like that?
Yeah, that was like 65 based on like six things he could think of off the top of his head that were missed. You know, he's like, yeah, I don't have the time to go through all of this, but here's the six things I remember, and those based on current costs were like $50,000. So,
Yikes.
Wow.
Yikes.
Wow. We need a new study.
Yes, we do.
I've studied our birthday calendar. We have three this week. We have Russell Pearson, a.k.a. Nine Reads, on October 19th. I know several other people on October 19th, but they're not on our calendar, so STBY. And October 21st is two birthdays. We have Daniel Edrup Jensen, a.k.a. Debdrup. If and when we ever get our chat room and video back up and running, I'm sure we'll see him occasionally. And Justin Deal, whom we've seen numerous times at Dragon Con, a.k.a. Null Operations.
Uh-huh.
He's also now a fellow podcaster. He started his... The Hidden Node podcast. So happy birthday to all of you.
He was doing that with our Dog Days of the Podcasting.
Yes. Ding. Where's my, I need a ding ding.
Yeah. You need a dinger?
I need a dinger. I don't have the dinger set up in
Mike's
the
Mike's probably
studio.
Got one still in the closet.
There's a dinger. There's a dinger.
We left the closet jokes out last week, so. If you need to go back and listen. If it's your birthday and you're not on our birthday calendar, head on over to chuckchat.com/wiki. And get your name out there. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year, assuming we're on the air or doing a podcast and not business traveling. Right, Craig?
I'm not going anywhere. Hey, podcast for a long time because you were traveling. So
yeah, I know how that goes. Welcome to my world.
Yeah.
All right. We have a quick break and we'll be right back with the Hacks and Strange Stories, which will include, oh my, Aquaman, because I always wanted to do that. Talk to a fish. And Carl Sagan on drugs.
He rolls 20 every time. He laid out plans for man to reach Mars and return safely on a cocktail napkin. The next day, it was approved. He always knows where his towel is. He is the most interesting geek in the world.
I don't always listen to podcasts, but when I do, I listen to Technorama. Stay geeky, my friends.
Hi, this is Dave Slusher from Evil Genius Chronicles, and you are listening to Technorama because you're in the cool club.
Wasn't even a cool club before we got started.
That's right. We made it.
That was what, 2005 he cut that for us? Maybe six?
I think it wasn't it outside at the...
Yes.
at the
podcast expo or something.
you sound bitter about this.
Yes. We didn't really know who anybody was, so we just walked up to random people and said, hey.
We shoved an eye river in their mouth and said, hey, speak for me.
The eye river. Most user hostile interface there ever was.
Hey, you know what? I think eye river made a killing when podcasts exploded. Then it quickly died off.
Now we have our Zoom H2 or 4 or whatever you got.
So since I'm the licensed the scuba diver, is this my story?
I'm a PADI certified dive master too, but I delegate this to you.
Dive master?
Yes.
Dive master, yeah, me too.
Awesome.
No, dive master and rescue diver.
There you go.
Hey, I can swim good.
There you go.
I can swim.
I'm drinking water.
I get my head wet in the tub.
No, this is a cool story. I actually saw this on, I was reading this on Craigslist.
On Craigslist?
On Facebook.
This podcast is Craigslist spelled a different way.
Chuck's already putting us on Craigslist to get rid
of it. I got Craigslist on the brain for some reason today.
Oh, wow.
No, I was reading this on Facebook. Ever fancied being Aquaman? This new prototype one day might make it possible. Remember how those action films where the actors only needed to use some sort of mouthpiece whilst being underwater?
Oh, James Bond had one
of
those.
Yeah, the little pen rebreather thing.
With two CO2 cartridges.
Yes, the 12-gram CO2s. Yes.
Exactly. Because that's what I want to be breathing is CO2 when I'm down underwater.
Exactly.
100 feet.
I can't breathe, but I can belch for 45 seconds.
Read on, my friend.
Oh, wow. No oxygen tanks were required, of course. Completely part of the James Bond style of gadgets. How awesome would that be? I went to the first set of scuba dives abroad last year and have to say absolutely incredible. It's a whole other world down there. However, oxygen...
Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha, ha. Yes, if you haven't scuba dived, you need to go do it.
Oh, yes.
It's really well worth it. I got lots of stories for that, but another time.
But that's another show.
That's another show. anyway, however, oxygen tanks were not exactly the lightest things to carry around.
Time, I'm going to be pedantic. You don't breathe oxygen down there.
No, you do not.
Compressed air.
Compressed air, because you need the nitrogen and the oxygen.
Wait a minute. What does pedantic mean?
Do you have a dictionary?
It's what all nerds do to correct other nerds.
Do you have Google?
Yeah, there we go.
It's like saying, if I had mutant powers, I would want to be Wolverine.
Yes. See, Google says, did I mean pandana or pandatic?
Pandemic.
Oh. Not to be pandemic about things.
I'll look at Ebola going. Thank you, Siri.
Reach down between my legs, ease the seat back.
Wow, this show is just completely off the rails. This is just like Slice.
This is what happens with hypoxia.
Yes, this is exactly why you don't breathe oxygen down there. It becomes toxic.
Right. Where were we again?
Anyway, tanks are really heavy. You have to strap them on and lug them around.
Okay.
Until you are in the water.
So,
anyway.
What happened here to change the story?
So, to change the story up, they have a South Korea designer named, Yeebyeon Yeon.
On this day in history.
Yeah, whatever. Unveiled a prototype fish gill or rebreather called Triton. It's just a prototype, but essentially it would filter the oxygen from the water.
Oh, like gillyweed.
Yeah, it's like gillyweed, except you don't grow gills on the side of your head. So let's hope the Triton designers team up with the scientists soon. A newly discovered crystalline material can also absorb and store oxygen at levels 160 times greater than air. This is really cool.
Yeah.
Because rebreathers were a really great idea, but there was nothing really in there that was catalyzing or making the air.
They do have them now, but they're incredibly expensive, so they're pretty much in the realm of the military, and the chemicals in them are incredibly caustic.
Yes.
So if you break down the membrane, you start inhaling things that are like typically worse than lye. So your lungs have the tendency to dissolve, which is
not a really good thing.
Not a good thing underwater.
Yes. Yeah. That's a really bad
idea. It's against the Geneva Convention, too.
I don't think it is if you do it to your own troops.
To your own troops?
Troops. But I got a question for you. So using something like this and getting water, air from, or oxygen from the water instead of like your tank, I think I already know the answer to this. That wouldn't help with like the nitrous problem in your blood with the bends and all that, would it?
No, you're still going to end up with that because nitrogen still absorbs into the blood regardless.
But you're not extracting the nitrogen out of the water.
Right.
No,
because that's the thing. It's going to be a rebreather system. So you're still going to be using the expelled air. You're just taking it's going to be replacing the carbon dioxide with fresh oxygen.
Okay. Right. There's still the regular nitrogen in the system.
Exactly.
Okay. I thought they were extracting the oxygen from the water.
Let's read on and see what it says here. No more strapping on tags, slippers, Aquaman. I'm trying to skim to see if it actually has anything about that. Let's see. You'd need to be filtering huge amounts of water to get anywhere near the amount of oxygen needed to sustain humans. So it will not be coming anytime soon, if ever, but we can dream, is what it's basically saying. So,
all right.
But it does bring up a few points, and I'm kind of rethinking that question that Craig had. He might be right, because if you're reusing the same amount of nitrogen, you're not basically nitrogenating your blood at a higher level. You're just rebreathing the nitrogen that's already there. That's kind of interesting.
And the problem with suffocation is not a lack of nitrogen. It's a lack of oxygenation into the blood, which this helps with.
Right.
But nitrogen narcosis
is too much blood in the nitrogen.
Too much blood in the nitrogen. Yeah,
I hate it when that happens.
I swear I haven't only had
a little bit of nitrogen tonight.
Well, I have another thought. Hey, I got another thought. So if this doesn't produce enough oxygen to sustain a human, would this allow you to maybe have a smaller tank?
Yeah, that could be too.
My thought on it is, since it seems to be oxygen binding, is how explosive is this stuff?
Oh, because oxygen is...
it's an incredible gathering of oxidizers.
It's an oxidizer. No smoking with your fish gills on.
Hey, by the way, the other news in this article, Ewan McGregor broke the fourth wall. He's looking at the camera.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes, he did. Yeah.
Yes, he is.
Nice.
He's going, hey guys, get this thing out of my mouth and give me a real tank.
Another nitpick from the Phantom Menace. Man.
Ugh.
All right. Tim's turn.
So many.
In the Remember When we have, oh yes, Carl Sagan. Tell us what Carl Sagan came up with.
Well, with the release of previously unpublished correspondence, in 1990, Carl Sagan sent a letter to the president of the Drug Policy Foundation with an idea for what, even today, sounds like an amazing television program about drug issues in America. Mm. It's now widely recognized that Sagan, while he was alive, not only smoked marijuana, but supported the legalization and use of the said drug.
I like that guy even more now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The former, meaning smoking marijuana, he did with some regularity. Sagan's widow, Anne Drian, specifies that the two of them smoked the way other American families would have wine with dinner. Okay, that's an...
Wow.
Wow.
What exactly goes with Maui Wowie?
And we thought Cosmos was science.
No kidding.
Yeah. Imagination.
The latter, however, he did far less often, and when he did so quietly. According to his widow, Sagan's public marijuana advocacy was severely limited by his prominent role at NASA, of course. Some of Sagan's most cogent thoughts on drug policy were therefore made public only under the protection of pseudonymity, most famously a 1969 essay written under the assumed name of Mr. X. Well, there's originality.
There's original.
In which
maybe they'll think it's Malcolm X.
Professor X.
Oh, God. And in that essay.
Yeah, Professor X. Now it makes all sense.
Yes, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to walk either. I'd be in a chair all the time.
And they actually, in the article, have a letter attached from Sagan. Should we read that?
Let's read it excerpted.
A little bit, yes.
Excerpted.
Excerpted, and can you read all that little teeny tiny stuff?
I was
going to
say exponentially, but you don't want to do that either.
This is from Sagan?
Is this from Sagan?
Cornell
from
University.
No, this is from Cornell University.
Yes. Okay.
No, it is from Carl Sagan, actually. There's a signature at the bottom. To, I believe, Dr. Arnold S. Trabach, who's the president of the Drug Policy Foundation. Yes. Dear Arnold, thanks for your recent letter on American drug forums. I quite agree that a balanced look at a broad array of drug issues on American television could do some good. However, there will be a powerful temptation to gear program content to match conventional values.
Ooh.
And worse, conventional questions. If I were a viewer of such a series, I'd be interested in the following sorts of questions being addressed. Wow. Why are all drugs lumped together in American rhetoric?
A good question.
Yeah. How many people are killed or impaired in America each year from tobacco and alcohol compared with other drugs?
Yeah, they don't want to.
Nobody's ever brought that up.
They don't want to talk about that.
What is a narcotic? What's some of the other stuff in here? Why do people take drugs? What are prominent misstatements about the safety or danger of drugs, including misstatements or research errors in the scientific literature? Wow, he's got
this is very topical.
Oh my goodness!
I mean, it's very today because boy, with all the changes in the marijuana views of marijuana right now, that's huge.
Here is the pièce de résistance in my view. If the financial rewards from drug dealing are so enormous, will not the suppression of the drug industry in one nation, Colombia, say, cause it to proliferate in another nation,
Ooh.
Laos, say? Wow, I'm going to have to bookmark this article.
Wow, that's good points.
Yes, best wishes, cordially, Carl Sagan. There's a
I can see Fox picking it up, and then they would cancel it.
All I had in mind at first before reading this letter was, have you ever really looked at your hand? But no, he goes much deeper than that.
Yeah,
let's take the ship imagination and go somewhere.
Yeah. Somewhere, yes.
I don't know where I was going with that.
Taco Bell.
I got a case of the munchies.
To Doritos and beyond. Oh my god.
No, that's good stuff.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
Craig, you find that one for us, or did I stick that in? Never mind. All right, Michael's turn.
Taking a drug, so
my turn.
He just read.
I just read.
Did you? I thought you were reading this one.
I can read this one. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Pumpkin carving.
I'll just do the color commentary.
Yeah, the pumpkin carving. The first jack-o'-lanterns were monstrosities carved from turnips. We didn't always carve pumpkins in history.
And go to the show notes and look at this article, because the picture is friggin' creepy.
Horrifying. And it's awesome. That's the kind of jack-o'-lantern. That's a Halloween jack-o'-lantern right there.
Not these, Michael Myers,
not
man.
These nice little round orange pumpkins.
You need to put a propane.
This looks like zombie flesh. It's awesome.
It does.
I thought it looked like the mask of Loki from the movie.
Okay, anyway, to the article.
Or Michael Myers.
Myers. Pumpkin carving has become such a cherished tradition that the sight of a glowing orange face grimaces every October. The glowing orange face grimaces every October is more heartening than frightening. But the original jack-o'-lanterns were meant to ward off unwanted visitors and look at them in museums. When one look at them in museums tells you they probably worked.
Get off my lawn!
Yeah, and as we said, they are creepy.
Hey, where do you get a turnip that big?
I don't think it's big. It's just a picture.
It's a small,
too.
Yeah, it's a small one.
They should put a quarter in there for scale.
No, you can get those down at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's lots of all kinds of, gourds and all kinds of different things.
Kohlrabi's. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you could get quarters there.
You can get pretty good size ones.
You can get quarters at the grocery store, too, yes.
Anyway, a man called Stingy Jack.
Stingy Jack.
Stingy Jack. Stingy Jack invented the devil of a drink and convinced him to shapeshift into a coin to pay with. What? I don't even understand that statement.
Oh, it's an Irish origin story. Of course there's drinking.
Oh, of course there's
Carl
drinking.
Carl Sagan.
Yeah. Of course. Okay, so when the devil obliged, Jack decided he wanted the coin for other purposes and kept it in his pocket. Of course he did. He's Irish.
Careful.
I know. Let's see. And he kept it in his pocket beside a small silver cross and to prevent it from turning into the devil. Coins turning into the devil. Okay. I don't know this folklore. Jack eventually freed the devil under the condition that he wouldn't bother Jack for 1 year and wouldn't claim Jack's soul once he died.
Deal.
The next year, Jack tricked the devil once more by convincing him to climb up a tree to fetch a piece of fruit. When he was up in the tree, Jack carved a cross into the trunk so the devil couldn't come down until he swore he wouldn't bother a stingy Jack for another 10 years.
Okay, the Irish devil's an idiot.
Yeah, pretty much.
What a deal is that?
He's pretty easy.
He's just an idiot. He's one of them special devils.
Wow. Special devil.
So anyway, continuing, when Jack died, God wouldn't allow him into heaven until the devil wouldn't allow him into hell, and the devil wouldn't allow him into hell.
Wow.
He was instead sent to the eternal night with a burning coal inside of his carved out turnip to light up his way.
Interesting.
Okay. Interesting. He's been roaming the earth ever since. The Irish began to refer to the spooky figure as Jack of Lantern.
Oh, which
then became Jack O'Lantern. This legend is why people in Ireland and Scotland began to make their own versions of Jack Lanterns by carving grotesque faces into turnips. Mangelwurzels, whatever the hell that is.
They're great with ketchup, I guess.
I like them deep fried.
HP sauce.
Potatoes and beets, placing them by their homes to frighten away Stingy Jack and other wandering evil spirits and travelers. When the Irish and Scots immigrated to America, bringing the tradition along, they found that pumpkins native to America made perfect fruits for carving. Pumpkin jack-o'-lanterns have been an integral part of Halloween festivities ever since.
Never knew the source of that.
I didn't either. Cool. That is very cool. And sorry for not being able to read that because I can't see.
He's got the wrong glasses.
I hate progressives.
He didn't leave his old glasses at the house, apparently.
I didn't. I was expecting them to be here.
I had no idea that was an Irish tradition.
Nor I. You see, Technorama listener, you might just learn something if you're not careful.
That's scary.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
Well, listen, thank God George Lucas did not remake Empire Strikes Back. Oh, the fans did, though. And I'll read the article and give you an idea. Huh?
What?
This is a cool project. Listen up.
Yeah. So, given recent events, it can be difficult to remember that the internet is capable of pretty much awesome stuff sometimes. Case in point, the super cool shot-for-shot fan remake of The Empire Strikes Back that uses some 480 different filmmaking techniques. It's spotted by Dig, and it runs the gamut from hand-drawn animation, intentionally cheesy live action, and even a makeshift echo base populated with stop-motion Lego.
It's got Legos. It's got to be awesome.
Did they actually finish? I remember reading about this like 10 years ago.
Wait.
Not the ASCII art one of episode one.
No. I remember reading an article about this forever ago.
Listen, look, the video length is 2 hours and 8 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Let me finish.
Oh, please do.
And that's just within the first few minutes. That's the minifigs I'm referring to. So over 1,500 hopefuls submitted their 15-second scenes. And like with the Star Wars Uncut, which is what you're thinking about, Tim, this is the second one before it. The at Lucasfilm stitched the best of them together to create The Empire Strikes Back. It's pretty impressive.
Lucasfilm was involved in this?
Yes. As a matter of fact, this is bringing back the Star Wars fan film contest that Lucasfilm is supporting.
Wow.
Who tied up George Lucas and beat him into submission to get this done?
You can get an idea of what's going on by this animated GIF at the top. See the stick that the robot's on.
Yes. Hey, I'm telling you, I watched the Star Wars one. It's well worth it to spend the time and watch this because some of it's like they're so out of context. The visually, as they go forward, but it's the same dialogue that you know.
Right.
And it's hilarious. Sometimes you'll see two dogs sitting there in front of consoles, you know, like they're flying an X-Wing or something. It's hilarious.
Oh, I've got to watch this.
A couple of kids doing something. So, yes, it's great.
I know what we're doing after the show.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah, the Star Wars one was awesome, and there's a link for it in the show notes or in the article over at Engadget. And then there's embedded is the Empire Uncut. Yeah, and if you watch it, you'll see a lady from Lucasfilm. She's announcing the fan film contest, which I think is started now. So you can actually go and vote for your favorite fan films. Wow. They did that a long time ago, too, the fan film contest. That was a lot of fun. But, yeah, go check this out.
I'm absolutely stunned that Lucas actually was involved with it. Lucasfilm, I should say, was actually involved with it.
They support
well, I think no. Disney, I think they're really trying hard to get fans pull back in because episode 7's coming. You know, so that's.
Oh, yeah, no. It started. I was basically after the 9 or 10 different editions of Star Wars. I Lucas is out of my life.
I keep thinking about all the lawsuits about things, but they'd have a field day at Dragon Con with, you know, the variations people take on some of that stuff.
But it's like the Star Wars stuff. As long as you don't make money off of it, Paramount's fine. You know, and I think that's probably the way it should be, really.
Yeah.
You crossed the streams there, buddy. You said no, Star Wars and Paramount. Well, we know, you know what
I'm
you
saying,
meant.
I'm just saying Paramount's take on Star Trek. Yeah, I was saying that they don't. They as long as you're not making money on the property.
Now you know what pedantic
you're
means.
Making fan film. You're making fan film. So anyway, I think it's cool that they would.
It is
would,
very cool. I'm gonna have to check this one out.
In other Star Wars news, James Earl Jones will voice Vader on Star Wars Rebels.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Did y'all watch Rebels?
No.
Crickets.
Since Star Wars Rebels is set between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, it makes sense that Darth Vader would pop up from time to time. And James Earl Jones will again loan his baritone to Vader in an extended version of the pilot episode. Deadline is reporting that Star Wars Rebels, Spark of Rebellion, the show's hour-long pilot movie, re-airs on ABC on October 26th at 7 p.m. We don't know what time zone, but we'll assume Eastern.
Probably.
Jones will make a cameo vocal.
Right.
I'm deeply disappointed.
Yeah.
I'm just going to breathe.
Vader, yeah, it was his scuba gear. Vader wasn't in the pilot when it was released on VOD and premiered on Disney XD, but the ABC broadcast will have an additional scene, one between Vader and the Inquisitor.
Mm-hmm.
According to the series creator and executive producer David Filoni, the scene will offer some insight into the character of the Inquisitor, but I imagine it won't be the last we see of Vader, which brings up an interesting point.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, he's dead, right?
Vader not in this seven?
No, Vader's dead.
Yeah, well, Vader's dead.
Not in this show.
But episode 7, he can't come back in that.
No.
Well, he could come back as a ghost like Yoda and, you know, Obi-Wan.
Sparkly green the sparkly Twilight.
Right. Yeah, it's Twilight Vader.
Right.
Twilight Vader.
But then they'd have to get another actor to play him for episode 7, and which means they'd have to re-release the prior films and edit him out of all of the scenes there as well. Yeah. Right?
Let's don't go that
and
round that
sell
rabbit
you
hole.
Another DVD.
And
exactly.
This is exactly why this is no longer in my life.
Hey, I'm just excited that it sounds like we might actually get the uncut original versions of Empire.
I will not believe it until I actually see it.
Who said that? Where'd that come from?
They're going to come out with a theatrical version. That's right.
They're saying that they're going to release the original theatrical versions of all three of the original films.
I will put my money down for that.
I know. I see that look on your face, Tim, and I know where you're going.
Disney has gone and said, oh, yeah, no, we'll release it. Just come see episode 7. We'll put it out on Blu-ray, but go see episode 7 first, and then we'll go ahead and
put it out. Yeah.
Nope.
I will happily go buy the theatrical version.
Okay, that's not what I saw in your eye.
No, they're talking about remastering it and putting on Blu-ray, which I really would kill kittens for. But
I don't believe you. Show me.
You know what? Show me the Blu-rays.
Craig, shut up. I got two cats here.
Yeah, they're too old.
They're not kittens anymore. They're safe.
But no, that's one of those things that, you know, I've been looking forward for my entire life. And Lucas has said, no, you'll never get it.
And then, yeah, but Lucas isn't involved in it anymore.
That's correct. No. But Disney is now dangling this carrot out, saying, show us that we can make money off of this franchise, and we'll do it for you.
Do you know how many people are hungry for the original theatrical release?
Every one of them.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I heard somebody was like, eat that up.
Which is why Disney's sitting here going with the carrot on the stick, going,
it could look like it was copied over VHS to VHS 8 times and all grainy, and they'd still buy it.
See, the problem is Disney doesn't realize that we're going to go see 7 regardless, whether it's good, bad, it sucks, whatever. We just might not go again, just like Phantom Menace and the other atrocities that they put out. But we'll go see it.
Family show, remember.
It's J.J. Abrams, so there's a spark of hope.
Right, right, and lots of lens flares.
Hey, I will say this, though.
The lightsabers are gone. They're all flashlights pointing at the screen.
Hey, the Star Wars Rebels, by the way, I did watch it.
Was it good?
Yeah, I actually enjoyed it. I think it's got a lot of promise. It's, you know, I enjoyed a lot of the Clone Wars part, and it started getting a little old after a while. But
I love Clone Wars.
Hey, yeah, Clone Wars is great, though. But, I mean, this has the music's there, the little bit of a group, mosh posh kind of group doing their thing is there. And it has a Star Wars feel to it, like a New Hope kind of feel. You have to watch it for yourself and see what you think. But I enjoyed it. I'll continue watching it.
All right.
Cool.
Yeah. That takes us to the end. We are done.
That's it?
This is the end?
The end.
It goes fast when you're having fun, doesn't it?
Can't be the end.
It
can't be the end.
Remember when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
Oh, actually, I got one.
What do you got?
I got one. I was surprised as heck to find out that I could actually download Automata. Automata.
Off of
iTunes. It was awesome. I downloaded it, and it's a really, really good film, guys. You got to go see it. What's it about? Okay. Well, the best way to describe it is Blade Runner crossed by iRobot.
Really?
And it is a good film.
The book or the shame of the movie?
Well, the book.
Okay.
It's not so much the shame of the movie.
Isn't it like the robots become sentient, or there's a question about that?
Yeah, exactly that.
Free on iTunes.
It is pretty cool. It's not free on iTunes. You have to buy it. But it's only $15 right now, and it's pre-released before the theater. iTunes has been doing that a lot lately, and I've been able to get a lot of movies before they actually even get into the theater. I got Horns, the Daniel Radcliffe movie, which had huge potential for the first 3 quarters of the movie, and then it fell down and wouldn't get back up again at the end. But other than that, I really enjoyed the first half of the movie. If you shut it off just before the end, you'll be really happy.
So it's a Spielberg film.
Yeah, basically, it's a Spielberg film, yes. but no, go check it out.
Okay.
It's Automata or Automata, however you want to say it.
Automata.
Well, actually, it's Automata is the way they say it in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Which is really kind of strange, but that's the way they say it. They say both, but anyway. But I'm trying to think of the people that are in it right now.
A couple of actors.
There's some special effects.
Every once in a while, the microphone gets in.
Actually, the special effects didn't look very special. It looked very much like they were really automated robots. So I don't know if they did that. There's a bit of CGI at the end of the film with one of the robots, but that one you had to do. The rest of them looked very like they just built a whole bunch of really clunky robots.
Cool.
And the clunkier they are, the cooler it is, because it's more visceral with them being kind of clunky robots. But the premise is good. The story is really good. I was really impressed with it.
I really don't care anything about the movie other than you've said they've released it to iTunes prior to the theater. I'm going home tonight and I'm buying it.
I know. Yeah, they've been doing that a lot. They've been doing that a lot lately. Yep. And I've been able to pick up a lot of films.
That's cool.
They're not the big blockbusters, obviously. They're not getting there yet. But some of the littler films, you're able to get them before they actually even hit the theaters, which is very, very cool.
Speaking of iTunes, you brought up something else this past week. 81 million downloads of U2's latest album.
How many of those, though, were the forced downloads?
Exactly.
Yes.
The majority of those people, I would say probably north of 90%, didn't want the download
and
can't get rid of it.
And that brings back the whole thing to the RIAA, right? piracy is not a problem. When Apple, for the first time in history, somebody wrote a program to unshare an album with the internet.
Yeah,
exactly.
Hey, needs to go
now.
If
they could just do that with my podcast.
I had the same thought, Craig. How do we get on that bandwagon and get 80 million downloads of Technorama, whether they want it or not?
I'm with you. Force download to your device, clunk.
Well, when we make a salary like Bono, I guess we'll learn how that was done.
Yeah, truly. Yeah, you write a check.
A big check.
But they had their own iPod back in the day. Remember the U2? Yes, it was a red one.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had one Harry that Potter. You could buy every U2 album on preloaded on the iPod. Yep. They're in tight with Apple. I want...
The interesting thing is how many people actually listened to that album that was forced on them. Because I know I've listened to one song out of that entire album that's come
Joey
down.
Joey Ramone.
And that was it.
The one that's on the commercial.
Yeah, that's the only one I've listened to. I haven't listened to anything else on that album yet.
The one that... I did hear the one that they played in the at the Apple event that was simulcast in Chinese. So
okay.
I actively went out and downloaded it. It was about a week after release. I was watching an NFL show, and they said, you can get this free on iTunes. So I went, but I couldn't get it because it said, you've already downloaded this.
Yeah.
Like, now, wait a minute. I was not in that majority of forced downloads. I'm in the minority that want it and can't get it.
Interesting.
No, it should be in your iTunes.
Yeah, it should be in your iTunes.
You have to go onto your account and list what's purchased and say, do it again. And I'm like, well, that was a whole bunch of roundabout.
You're on Tim Cook's blacklist.
They hate you too, Chuck. That's
I
all
guess
it is.
Our Steve Wozniak interview didn't go that well years ago. Oh, yeah. He's on my Skype list. I'm calling the guy now. All right, we are done. Now we're at the end of the show, right? Are we?
Yeah,
good?
I don't
have
anything else.
Thank you, gentlemen. Hope to see you again next week. And we hope to have our video and live chat up and running very soon. For all to enjoy, plans are in the works. Mike and I are...
Hey, we have video in the studio.
Yes, we do.
You can see video. It's right there.
Wave at the camera.
We can wave at the cameras. They're up. They're working.
If you come park in the front yard, we'll open the window and you can watch.
That's right.
Security cameras.
That'll work.
It's just we haven't figured out how to actually get the video that's we're looking at. Down the pipe.
You know what? For as many people that view, they could fit in this room.
That's probably true.
Everybody go to Chuck's house.
That's right.
And they would all fit in my driveway. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, we could use your feedback. Call us on the listener line, 206-222-2428. That's 206-222-CHAT. Same as it ever was. Email us at technorama@chuckchat.com. We're also... He had to do the arm thing. He knew Tim was going to do the thing on his arm. I just like dropping triggers like that. Find us over at chuckchat.com/technorama for all of our information about Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus, and all of that. Yes, that highlighted stuff that Craig did on the screen just to mess with me. Thanks for Mad Marv for providing all the great blog content during the week. Check out our Facebook page. There's lots of other cool stuff there as well. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and Craig is back so he can take us out.
Oh, 101.
So much for the nice things I said about you last week.
Yeah, no kidding.